Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Creating Change. This is your host, Doug Foresta. Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that I think is a really important one that we don't really like to talk about a lot, which is money. We're talking about the inner journey of money. And my guest is Lisa Peterson. Couldn't have a better guest with me to talk about this. And you might say, well, what is the inner journey of money? What do you mean by that? Well, stay tuned and you will find out. Lisa Peterson, first of all, thank you so much for joining me on Creating Change.
Thank you so much for having me here, Doug.
Thanks. So you are a podcaster yourself. Maybe you can just tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do.
So I'm a business coach and a money coach, and I have this podcast called The Art of Mindful Wealth. But I really feel like the biggest thing that I'm doing in all of the areas that I touch is teaching people about money and mindfulness. And what that means is really just being present with our experiences with money so that we're not in denial, avoidance, all the things that I think people resonate probably with at some level when it comes to money. And I like shining the spotlight on that relationship that we have with money.
So, I'm really excited about talking about this because I just don't think that we talk about it enough. But, you know, I mentioned at the beginning, you talked about mindfulness, and I mentioned this idea about the inner journey of money. And my first question for you is this idea about, what do you mean by the inner journey of money?
Well, I think, first of all, it's really acceptance of wherever you're at with money. That is the way I think about the inner journey. So looking at how is money showing up in your life and what is your relationship with it? So one of the funny exercises that I do that's a big wake-up call for many, many people is we don't realize that we actually have a relationship with money. It's not something that we've ever been taught, you know, that it's a relationship, kind of like an extra person in our home. But one of the things I do when I speak to audiences is I'll have them break up in pairs and talk to the other person as if they're money. And it's really funny because we've never been given that opportunity to explore how we truly feel about money. Like most of the time, it's just avoiding it and either liking it or hating it, depending on what's happening in our life. But all of a sudden, by having this conversation, you know, with this person and it opens up all these things that you're like, wait a minute, I never knew that I felt that way. No wonder it's not showing up the way I want it to. So does that help a little bit? I mean,
it definitely helps. And, you know, one of the things that I hear people say a lot is, well, if I just had more money, everything would be fine. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that, you know, I know a bit of your story, and I know that, you know, that's not necessarily or at all the case, right? Because it's a relationship, like you're saying. You know, so let me ask you this. If I say to myself, okay, I want to work on this relationship with money, is that something that I can do myself? Is that something I need support with? How would I even go about doing that?
I think about it kind of in a four-step process. If you want to explore this relationship, it first starts with an acceptance of where you're at. And it's kind of funny to use this analogy, but it's actually very applicable, is in AA, they talk about, you know, acknowledgement that you're an alcoholic. Like you can't do anything until you reach that place of acceptance and allowance. And so same thing with money. It's this process of accepting where you're at. And, you know, oftentimes I found that many people are living in some level of scarcity with money, you know, not having enough and thinking that it's going to solve all their problems if they get it. So it starts by assessing and accepting where you're at, honestly, you know, how you feel about it. The second step is you want to decide if you're going to do the work on your own or if you're going to find a guide. And the best way I can think about this is there was a time when I was actually really lost on a hiking trail, and I had been taking the wrong path back, you know, over and over again, trying to get back to a campsite. And we came across a man, and he tried telling me the direction to go, but I didn't get it. I was too upset. I was disoriented from hours of being lost. And finally he said, you know, why don't you just follow me? I'll guide you where you want to go. And he took, you know, us back with him to the camp, which was really easy. He saved a lot of time and he saved me peace of mind. And I think this whole experience with money is just like that. You know, sometimes we can get back on our own. We can get where we want to go with it. But sometimes we just are so disoriented and tired of smashing our head up against the wall almost. And we need a guide. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And especially with money, I think it's such a great analogy, because I think we've all been there where, you know, I remember in the days before GPS and we had maps. And I, you know, I remember I have a terrible sense of direction. And I remember, you know, looking at these maps, you know, it's the middle of the night and I'm tired and hungry. And I'm going, there's no way I'm going to be able to read this map effectively. It's just not going to happen. So I love what you're saying about sometimes we just need someone to say, follow me and I'll guide you to where you need to go, because we're too upset. We're too disoriented. We're too caught up in our own stuff to be able to get out on our own. That makes a lot of sense.
And the other pieces, I mean, if we want to dive into it, you know, step three and four is number three, listening to what money is telling us, just like that example I gave about having this conversation. And what's really interesting is sometimes we're so judgmental about what we've done right and what we've done wrong that when we talk to money, we realize that it just doesn't want to be judged anymore. You know, there's so much emotion and intense resistance going on that we are really going to be more successful, whether we're working with a guide or on our own, and just stopping the resistance. And then finally entering into this place of, you know, freedom from judgment. And it frees up all this energy and space in our heart and our minds that allow us to be okay with where we're at without trying to say it should be a different way. And that tends to open up the door to really positive change with money, is just not trying to judge so much. Do you know what I mean?
You know, as you're saying that, it's really powerful. I guess one of the things I would ask you is about, what would you say to someone who, I love what you're saying about being able to listen to what lack is telling us. You know, I guess this might go back to the getting a guide part, but what happens, how can I make that shift from I'm feeling lack and I'm just lost in the lack to being able to listen to it?
There's lots of different ways. One of the things that I've, modalities that I like to use is emotional freedom technique and tapping to engage in what you're talking about. And even in my own situation, it's kind of funny. I've been working on a book around scarcity and abundance and how do you make that transition. And at one point back in the winter, I was just knee deep in writing and I was having all these money problems come up. And there was one day where I just kind of had a breakdown because I was like, well, how in the heck can I be writing a book about scarcity when I'm sitting here totally living in scarcity? And I used tapping to help me move through all this emotion that was coming up. And I kind of look a little bit silly, right? I just start tapping. And if anyone's familiar with it, I have videos and there's lots of videos on the internet about emotional freedom technique. But the way I like to use it, which is a little unique, is I go after what am I most in resistance to? And so in that moment, I was most in resistance to the idea that I was living in scarcity. I didn't want anything to do with that because I thought I couldn't write a book that would be helpful to people if I was actually living it. But that's not true, right? The whole reason I'm interested in writing the book is because of my personal experience. So the minute I started to say, although I'm living in scarcity mindset, I fully and completely love and accept myself and move through tapping with this very much of an acceptance mindset, by the time I was done, within a very short amount of time, I was free from that. And I've never looked back since then.
So I hear somebody, you know, I can hear somebody listening to this thing going, okay, but if I allow myself to feel all the lack and the scarcity, like, won't it just be worse? How does that happen? And how does it get better from allowing myself? Okay, now I've allowed myself to feel that. How does it get better from there?
Yeah. So it's going back to the resistance. So the things that we resist in life have a way of persisting, right? Again and again, they come back. And so now, for the first time in our life, or in this case, this was the first time I had ever really said to myself, it was okay to be living in lack. Like, I was accepting this state of mind. And that's the secret ingredient is once we can emotionally stay in a place where we're just not saying I shouldn't be doing this. It's that should or could. And the minute you give up that fight and that struggle against what it should be, and you're sitting there, and tapping allows you to stay out of your head. It allows you to go into your heart and allow and really feel what's coming up, because it isn't like instantaneous. Obviously, I have a lot of experience in this. There are several cycles of tapping that I go through, and I just let whatever comes up. So it wasn't just living in scarcity that was my problem. It was being judged by other people, the idea that I would write a book that nobody would want. So lots of different things got unlocked in that one kind of experience that I had bottled up as just being one thing. Typically, it's a lot of different things that are coming up, and we can't sort through them because our mind doesn't process very well, especially it doesn't process emotions, does it, very well? So is this helping at all?
No. Okay. Yeah. As you're saying it, what I was thinking about the, you know, when I remember the first time I came across the words of the Ram Dass. So I think I was like 16, and I remember going to some speaking event or something, and I remember this guy saying, you know, this is something that will be useful for you for the rest of your life. It's from the Ram Dass, you know, be here now, which I know many listeners are familiar with. And now that I hear you saying this, that's really what I hear you saying is, like, the heart of it is really being where we are with money. And that when we fight it, when we fight being where we are, and we get in our head and we're not present, that's a big part of the problem. Would that be fair to say?
Completely, completely true. And notice, even as you were speaking, I mean, money is a reflection of really how we feel about ourselves at the end of the day. Now, it doesn't start out that way, I think, in life, because willpower and the conditioning that we've received around being able to make money is pretty strong, and it carries us for a while. I think in my youth, I had no idea, right, that I had a relationship with money, and I just worked my butt off, and I was really good at making money. But later in life, we sort of slow down and we start to try and use some greater wisdom and not have to work as hard as we used to. And everything changes, because now it does become more of a reflection of how we feel about ourselves. And when it's not showing up, typically it's because we're really struggling with the present moment and how we feel about ourselves.
One of the things I love about you is that you use money as a method, money and work is like a vehicle for spiritual practice. And I'm curious about, I want to ask you in a moment about sharing a client story, but before I do, I wanted to get your perspective about this, about what would you say to people? I hear this quite a bit in the spiritual community where people say, I don't care about money, I'm spiritual. So I don't want to think about money, I don't want to talk about money, I don't want to deal with money because I'm too spiritual. I'm curious about your thoughts about that.
Yeah, there's a lot there. It is true that when we're in our journey, our life journey, in all fairness, you know, when you think of the archetypes, right, Joseph Campbell's work, when you're in that phase of the wanderer, money's not going to be as important to you. And you're going to be really looking at that self-development piece. So in all fairness, it is a natural part of the process. I've gone through it. I think most people have. But the problem is when you get stuck there and you can't get out of that archetype. Like, you can't see that there's actually this human body with a very material experience taking place. And you actually are becoming a martyr in your resistance to engaging in taking good care of yourself, taking good care of others. And that's what happens when money comes into your life, right? You can do the things that you're doing in a bigger way because money is that great resource that helps you do that. So yes. It's noticing the balance that there's a time and place for everything, but you probably don't want to get stuck in this thought that money isn't spiritual because it's going to cause your life journey not to be as robust, as dynamic, and I think as meaningful as it could be because you're limited.
I know that you have many powerful client stories, but you have one that I know you're going to share with us today. I'd love if you could share that with our listeners.
Yeah, I love telling stories. And this one is a really touching one for me. I have a client who's a commercial broker, and she had a big real estate deal on the table, and she'd been working very hard for several months to close this deal. But the problem was that she had a landlord who threatened to stand in her way. And this landlord was really taking up a lot of energy in her life. His demeanor and the things he was doing were threatening to everything that she had worked so hard to put together. And she knew he had the power to derail the whole entire thing. So she was, angry at this landlord and felt a lot of stress. So she came in on one of our coaching sessions, sharing with me what had happened, expecting me to say, "What a jerk. I can't believe he did this to you." She was looking for me to sympathize. Instead, here's what happened. I told her that we needed to do a practice of compassion for the landlord. And with this comment, I put her on the spot because that was the absolutely last thing that she wanted to do. And so we did a compassion practice right there and then. And I think she might have wondered, what the heck am I doing? But she trusted me enough to try it. And very quickly, we worked through this practice. And as we were moving through the experience of putting ourselves in the shoes of this landlord, tears began to stream down her face as she felt the anger and the fear release from her body. And now, instead of hatred, she was replacing her feelings, towards him with love and appreciation and understanding and empathy. And this completely changed the way that she thought of this man. So within 24 hours, the landlord changed his position, and the deal went through shortly thereafter. But here's the most amazing part of the story. You're probably thinking that after we did our session, she had this heart-to-heart with the landlord and he came around. But instead, she never had a conversation with him in the time between our practicing compassion and when he changed his mind. What changed was within her own heart and mind. And as a result of this, she is enjoying her job so much more. She doesn't have nearly the level of stress and anxiety that she used to have because she no longer lives in fear that the next person will come along and derail a deal. She knows that she never has to deal with that again if she chooses. And that's the power of this work.
Very powerful story. One of the questions that I have for you is, in your... I know it's like one of those things like you ask, like how, I guess the question I have is how in your experience do you think that works? Because he didn't talk to her. Like, how does that work that you can experience that inside shift can create that outside shift like that without her having even had a conversation with him?
So it depends on how I'm going to answer this question. There's dimensional aspects.
Sure, sure. I know. I feel like I'm asking the quantum physics question. I know.
You are. But here's the deal. First of all, I truly believe that the other people that are showing up in our lives are merely a reflection. And I say merely with lots and lots of love. The way that they are showing up in our lives is a reflection of the things that we're having happen inside of us. And I can't tell you you know, how many times this situation has happened for my clients and for others. It does defy logic. It isn't going to be something that the mind is ever going to solve. But when we know deep inside of us that we have engaged in an emotional shift around someone, everything changes. It changes with our husband or our wife. It changes with our best friend. It changes with our children. I mean, all of the work that I do centers from the idea that if we can get our house in order, if we can truly master ourselves, the world will be mastered by us merely through our work on our own stuff.
So different from the normal story that we have, I think, that so many of us have about money, which is that it's sort of a victim story, you know, about money, something out there that hopefully someone gives us, and it's really difficult, and you know, all that stuff, all those stories. Totally. Yeah. And I know that, like I said, I know I was putting you on the spot there a little bit. I don't really expect you to answer how does that work, but I think what's so powerful in what you said is, and I hope that listeners take this away, is that when we shift, like we think like the problem is, this is what I hear you saying, tell me if I'm wrong, or at least part of what I hear you saying. We think that the problem is that something needs to change out there. Your client was like, the landlord is a jerk and they need to change. And what needed to change was inside herself.
Definitely. It's exactly what every single thing that's happening to us, whether it's be with money or other things, the idea that we can spend a lot of time and use willpower to change the things on the external is totally true and valid. There's always going to be that option. I, however, am the person who looks for the path of least resistance in life. I don't like to struggle. I don't like to fight. I don't like to have more pain and suffering than life already brings on.
Good choice.
And so I choose this path because nothing but good things have happened in my life when I engage in this sort of practice.
I really just think it's so, what you're sharing is so beautiful. And like I said, so different from the ways in which we normally think. And just the idea, honestly, if we had done this episode and only talked about the idea that you do have a relationship with money, that alone, I think we could have ended there. We really could have. But to hear the stories that you shared, I just think it's so powerful. I also want to give a shout out, as we have a couple of minutes remaining here, to your podcast. And I know that you talked about it a little in the beginning, but first of all, if you can mention it again, and then what kinds of topics you cover on the podcast as well, because I think it's a great podcast.
Sure. So The Art of Mindful Wealth, it's on iTunes, and it was really my journey to bring together these two worlds of spirituality, spiritual discovery, inner wealth, inner development. So I interview, you know, psychics, I interview empaths, I interview people who do breath work or mindfulness practices. It's really, really fun. That's kind of my woo-woo side. So I have that. And then I bring people on who are experts in the area of finance and money management, but they've got a different take. I mean, I'm not bringing everybody. I'm bringing people who are interested in the inner work and how it shows up in the outer work. I'm interested in socially responsible investing. How can we make the world a better place through resiliency? You know, those sorts of things that are really interesting to me, having been a financial advisor for many years, wanting to show a different side, that it's not all Wall Street, right? That there's a whole other world out there that is super important for us to learn about. And I'm bringing those two aspects together. How does that sound?
It sounds pretty good to me. I also want to make sure that people know how they can find you. So obviously that's your podcast, but if people are listening to this and they say, boy, I would like some support in all those things you talked about, how can they find you?
So a great place to start is wealthclinic.com, all one word. And that's my website that features meditations that you can download. It's got lots of different freebies and the work that I'm putting together. And you can learn more about me. You can also write to me at lpeterson@wealthclinic.com. I love interaction, even on the emails that you get from me. I invite people. I tell everyone, email is meant to be interactive. Please share, you know, something with me. It could just be where you like to travel. But I love having these sorts of conversations about money and mindfulness anytime, anywhere.
Lisa Peterson, we only cover the tip of the iceberg today. Have to have you back to continue the conversation. But thank you so much for joining me on Creating Change.
Thank you, Doug, so much. And thank you for your audience listening in.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Remember, till next time, keep creating. The world needs your gifts. This is Doug Foresta at Creating Change.